Hello, and welcome to Sobercast. We provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in a podcast format. We are an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into the virtual basket. Also, if you're a member of NA or have friends that are, please tell them about our other podcast, NAPOD. NAPOD features NA speakers and workshops in the same format as Sobercast. We upload a new speaker every day, and it's easy to subscribe by searching for NAPOD, N-A-P-O-D, all one word, on any podcast player app, or go to napod.xyz if you'd like to listen online. Hope you enjoy the podcast, and have a great day.
Good evening, and welcome to the North Oakland Double Speaker Meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Dan, and I said let's start the meeting four times before I yell.
Hi, Dan.
I'm also an alcoholic and your secretary. Now is a good time to turn off your cell phones.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't already.
Please join me in opening the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problems and help each other to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Okay, so now I'm going to introduce Tobias, who should need no introduction at all if you have any kind of sobriety whatsoever.
Hey guys, Tobias. What's going on? Alcoholic. Is he pushing me to stand up? Are you serious? I actually am standing up. Oh, man.
I can do it.
That is fucked up. So, how's it going, guys? Tobias, alcoholic.
Am I done already?
Okay. I've forgotten the gentleman's name, but he asked me to share at this meeting a couple days ago, and he was like, I was like, oh yeah, he said it's a little meeting, it's a new meeting, it's not that big of a deal, it shouldn't be that, or whatever. And he gave me the address, and I was like, oh, I don't know this meeting. And then he was all like, well, it used to be on 60 whatever, and it's a double speaker meeting. And I begged him, I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. I thought you had to be like an elite, like ninja to speak at this meeting. I was like, maybe 10 years, you know, I'll get there, but not after 5. I'm like already pooping. So just a little bit of whatevers. I have over five years sober. Let's see, my sponsor's right there. That guy in the white shirt who's looking at me. I have, how many do I have? I have 3 sponsees, and I guess I'm on, what step am I on, Fred? 1? Always on 3. And you know, like, I am a singer and a vocalist, and I don't know, I think that I have ADD, or whatever you call it, when you're always afraid you're going to forget stuff. So every show, before every show, I hand write all my lyrics in real big, on these big pieces of paper, and I bring them with me, and I actually tape them all over the ground. So you guys don't know I'm, and I wear sunglasses, so you guys don't know I'm actually reading stuff on the floor as I'm performing, you know, because I'm always in fear that I'm just going to forget everything. So, and if you move my piece of paper, the show's done. We're done. Then I have to vocalize, and you know, you don't want to hear that. Anyway, so I had to write some stuff down this morning. I was freaking out about sharing at this meeting, and I was like, no, dude, you're not going to do that thing where you go up there and you're not going to remember anything you said. You're just going to be, you know, you're just going to be levitating the whole time and not feeling it. Like, let's actually try and, you know, say some stuff that's got some kind of continuity to it and whatnot. So I wrote some stuff down here. This is just some, you know, beginning stuff, and then I'm just going to throw it out and just, you guys will throw stuff at me. My father had been a child prodigy preacher in Texas, turned to a meth-doing Satanist in SF. My 2-year-old sister dies of leukemia. My dad is cheating on my mom, hitting her and casting devil spells on her. We leave my dad, move to Berkeley. It's the 60s. Yeah, that's right. I'm old. My mom is vacant, sad, depressed. And this is, I was writing this off of instant coffee, by the way. So, okay, where was I? My mom is vacant, sad, depressed, unable to nurture and raise me proper. I am sad all the time. None of the kids I meet really seem to understand me. It seems that I should have been crying all the time, but I did not. After those stupid Peanuts cartoons, I would bawl my eyes out. I don't know if anyone's had that experience, but I really enjoyed the Beatles, comic books, and drawing superheroes. We live next door to hippies. They like me a lot and think I'm far out. I like them. They kind of remind me of dirty superheroes in the Beatles. Wow. They give me weed. They give me acid. My mind is blown. I am 7. Okay. It's 4 a.m. Someone breaks into the back of our house, takes a hammer, enters my mom's room, and proceeds to beat her with it. She calls for me. I feel as though I'm levitating towards her. She is covered in blood, head to toe, in her nightgown. She reaches out for my hand. I take it. She lives. I don't think she was supposed to. At some point, I snapped. I think I was around, it was around the 3rd grade. I had been shut down and pretty much in shock all the time due to what had happened to my mom. In school, I was made fun of a lot due to my influences and being pretty stony and hanging out with the hippies. Freaky, fringy vests were made for me. At one point, I had a sty in my eye, and I was told I needed to wear an eye patch. And I would beg my mom to lend me her high-heeled boots to go to school in. So you can imagine, I was quite the target for being messed with. I was an outsider, loner, nut job. So, you know, at that point in school, I don't know what happened, but I'd had enough. Like, I just snapped, and I went crazy and beat some kid up. I beat the crap out of him, and all of a sudden, I was a hero by the kind of, like, the other folks, you know, on the other side of the tracks, you know, or whatever you, however you want to call it. And I felt welcome with this whole other crew of people, you know, and I continued to fight and, you know, to, you know, not go to school and to drink. And, you know, like the rest is pretty much like a 40-year drunk log, for me. You know, I mean, there was juvenile hall, there's wives, there's grandchildren, I'm a granddad. There's dad, there's all that stuff that happens, you know. I mean, it's like I've had so many different phases of my life where I tried to stop doing one thing and then did something else. I did meth for 13 years, you know, and without drinking, I hardly drank. And then when I finally went to rehab for that and was clean off of that for a year, and that I thought drinking would be okay because it wasn't doing meth, and that just opened up a whole nother can of worms, you know. So that carried on for years, you know, and really already?
Wow.
Damn, it goes by fast. Basically, what's that?
Take half the mic.
I can take half hers. what had happened was that having that taste of rehab and actually connecting with other people and actually sitting in a room and you know, talking about feelings and about how we had gotten here. I hadn't gotten to the steps much yet. I was just happy to be around other people who were suffering and able to connect with people and find compassion. You know, the stuff I didn't get when I was younger was happening to me at rehab. Of course, then I went on to drink for many years later. But it wasn't until my sister was diagnosed with cancer and my she had tried to help me a lot through my earlier years with she was a Buddhist and just tried to get me to kind of find myself and in some way. She was very helpful with me getting into rehab and stuff. So what had happened is she got worse, and I was always in fear of communicating with my family because I was always either hungover, being dishonest, or just whatever. Basically, what happened was my sister got worse. I needed to start showing up for her and my family, and I started actually. I was so wrung out and so in fear that I actually asked for help, and Luckily enough, I lived close to central office, and I reminded myself of those rehab, and how comforting that was to be around other brothers and such, you know. And is it close? Am I getting close? I have like another. Each time I talk, it's taking it away a half a second. So
you're 2 minutes over.
I'm 2 minutes over.
Yeah.
So, anyways, holy Jesus, guys! I don't know how that happened, but here I am, and I'm sober. And thank you. I guess I got to pull out, but. But I love being sober, and I'm so grateful that I have you guys, and I just love being, you know, I just love it. Thank you so much.
All right, and now Catherine is going to share as much or as little of her story as she'd like until 8:55.
Hi, I'm Catherine, an addict, alcoholic. Well, my worst nightmare already happened, and it's Tobias, because...
What's that?
I'm an alcoholic filled with self-centered fear, and I was kind of like you when I was younger, and now I became, I don't know, like a 61-year-old normal person, and when I come to these meetings, I think, I wish, you know, I wore some leather, or I had that haircut, or anything, but... But really, actually, first, welcome to the newcomers. You are the most important people in the room, and you're really important to us. And if you haven't already, it's a really great idea to get a big book, get a sponsor, like anybody in this room tonight who has more time than you do, and start working the steps, because you actually never have to drink again, and that's actually a great thing. It turns out that, as he said, it's a blast. And I think one of the things I love in AA is it's not like you're applying for a job or like trying to get a date on Craigslist or hook up on Tinder. Like, no dressing up, no resume, no washing your clothes. Like, the more down and out you are, the happier we are to see you. You can be mean and a little stinky and hate us, you know, because we all came in like that, really, in our own different ways. So, let's see. I'll say, so self-centered fear, I'm really shy. And I speak for my work a lot, and that's no problem. But, like, if I have to tell you, like, the insides of me and what really happened, I just get a little shaky, so I'll be a little shaky for, like, 15 minutes, and then I get over it. So I'm going to do what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. So what it was like... was a lot like Tobias's family, but now I have all this gratitude because my mother didn't get hit with a hammer. You know, I mean, really, not to make light of it,
The
way, it's not to say that, like, that's why I'm an alcoholic where I came from. I just want to tell you about it because some of you are from there too. And no matter what it was like, the message I have is you can recover. The only problem is, like, once you get sober, there's all this shit you have to deal with because, right, you didn't feel it before, but you can, and then life is amazing. So I grew up in a really poor family, really violent family, lots of mental illness, lots of my dad beating my mom, lots of incest, lots of 3 schools every year because my parents couldn't pay the rent, you know, like that. And I didn't really know anything was wrong, actually. And back in the day, because I'm 61, a really great political thing is if you graduated from high school, which I barely did, and you were poor enough, you got admitted to the state school and you got a grant to go. And so that really changed my life. And I'm the oldest of 4 girls. All my sisters started doing drugs and alcohol around age 7 to 13, and I wasn't going to do it. I was going to get away from that fucking family and the fucking projects. So I went to college, and I started drinking the first weekend to blackout for years, a daily drinker, blackouts on the weekend, all around the world, everywhere. drugs are a big part of my story, but I don't know, I got spared, like, going all the way down, which I want you to know about, like, what happened. So I had this childhood, I got through it, I didn't know anything was wrong, started drinking as soon as I got my hands on alcohol, and had a bunch of Fs in college. I'm like a reasonably bright person, but I couldn't show up, I just couldn't show up for life. So my 20s looked really adventurous, and I went all over the world, I went scuba diving and windsurfing and everything you could think of, adventure sports, and I was miserable, like at least half the time. I was like suicidal, miserable, and I had no idea why. So I moved to San Francisco in 1985, and I called my youngest sister, who was the first one in recovery. Oh, back when she had gone in recovery, I'd never heard of the 12 steps. And this is how you know you're an alcoholic. I don't know why. I was standing on a couch drunk at a party reading the 12 steps, and we were all laughing. And, like, you know, non-alcoholics don't bother. But I would always, I saw her life get better and better. And in my experience, she had a really low bottom. And so I'd always think, wow, if it could help her, maybe it could help me. But I wouldn't go near it. But I would call her when I was in just all these wretched states and say, what would someone from AA say? You know? And then she would give me advice, like from the steps and whatever. So I moved here. I was 32 years old. I thought this would fix it. I was gay, like coming to San Francisco in 1984. You know, it's like, woohoo. And I was still miserable. And so I called my sister in AA and said, I'm going to kill myself, you know, which I often said, but this time I was serious. And she said, well, you could. you know, people in AA, okay. But I think you should just try an ACA meeting, an Al-Anon, just once before you do that. And so that was actually the beginning of my recovery. I went to Al-Anon that night, and welcome to the visitor from Al-Anon. It wasn't until I kept the focus on myself that I and quit caretaking my family, whose lives I was trying to save, that I realized I was a daily drinker. And I drank constantly to black out, and drugs were increasingly becoming a part of my story. And the last time I did them, I was in Santa Cruz with friends, and all we know is I left the house. And they found me later that day, and I had all kinds of pills in my pocket that I don't know where I got them or who from. I just kept saying, I've been roller skating. I don't know if that's true or not. But I hallucinated for 3 days. And you know how it is when you're out there with the people still practicing, what'd they do? Well, they hid me in the bedroom. They thought I should go to the emergency room, but they didn't want to take me because they didn't want us all to get arrested. And they're still my friends. So that's how it was, and I couldn't drive myself home 3 days later, like something was so neurologically wrong, and another friend drove my car home, and I couldn't drive for a week, and I've been in Al-Anon long enough. You know, I kind of knew about addiction at this point in my choices. I finally kind of got that it was probably do this or die. And as much as I still often wanted to die, something in me wanted to live. And so if I say God in this story or higher power, like, I hated that shit when I came here. I just mean like the ocean or whatever that force is that got us in the door or what it's like when we greet each other, you know, whatever that is. So, let's see. Well, actually, I was going to delay coming in here for a while, but shortly after the 3-day blackout, I went to a joint AA Al-Anon conference over here in the East Bay, January 1987. And, we used to always have an Al-Anon and AA speaker, so I was there as an Al-Anon person, of course. And, the speaker told my story. You know, not on the outside, but on the inside. And it, like, hit me really for the first time. Like, I'm an alcoholic. So in the hallway, I was telling all my Al-Anon friends, like, oh, my God, I think I'm an alcoholic. And one of them said, that explains a lot. And really, it just took from there, you know. And it takes what it takes. So I knew this woman I had a big crush on who was a secretary at a meeting, and I went to it, you know, every day for 90 days, and that really helped. And let's see, what really happened? Just like denial, you know, started cracking. I had never gone on a date or had sex for the first time clean and sober. Never gone on a job interview without being drunk the night before. When my first sister came out of rehab, it never occurred to me not to drink at the table, and that was probably breakfast or lunch. Like, it did not ever occur to me not to drink. And so I had to learn everything. And I felt, like, really together then, and I wore black all the time, and I had a big political critique, and fuck you, and everything. And what I didn't have were any skills to get along in the world. So I remember I had this idea of this, I had a full-time job, and I had an idea, like, oh, I'm in recovery. Oh, wait, first I got fired 5 months into recovery because I had such a big attitude, bad attitude. And once I stopped drinking, I couldn't contain myself anymore. So I got fired, and the miracle there was I called the program friend crying, and she said, oh, somebody else from the program just called me, and somebody just quit, and they need somebody. And I got that job on Monday, and I had that job for 5 years, and it was a major part of early recovery. Part of that, though, was I wanted to be in this really esoteric career that's hard to get into, and I found an internship so I would work at night and go to this in the day. And at the end of 6 months, both other people in my intern class got jobs there, which was a really big deal, and I didn't. And I'm not sure, but as an alcoholic, I believe I was the most talented and suited for the job. And so I asked my supervisor why, and she said, well, you know, honestly, it's kind of odd. You come in here and you don't talk to anyone, and they give you your work, and then you turn in these projects and you don't talk to them. And then that's how I was. Like, All my class background, all my fear, everything started coming up. Like, I thought I was a big radical, but in fact, I was terrified to go to Macy's. I thought they would ask me to leave. I was afraid to talk to anyone at work. I had this kind of big career outside as an activist, and inside was just like this crumbly person. One of the amazing things in early recovery is because I was living in the Castro, I would go to Castro meetings, and you know, it was early 1987, we didn't even have AZT yet, and so the guys in my meetings were getting HIV, getting AIDS, and dying. A lot of them had long-term sobriety, and they were amazing. So, like, I would have a hangnail, you know, like, should I shoot myself or not? And I really started to get a perspective because there were people who were happy, joyous, and free even while they were dying. And they were having feelings like I'd never seen. And it was an honor to be around it. And it helped me get a grip in early recovery. Let's see, around 5 years into sobriety, anger hit. Like, wow, I just always been this nice person except out there in the political world, and like blinding anger. So one day I couldn't get my closet door open, so I kicked it in. And another time I lost my keys, so I kicked out the front window of my house. Like, I was just so mad. And I didn't even know why. And what helped with that is I was in a meeting with someone who had less time than I did, and she was so angry. I could really see it. And I thought, wow, she's going to drink if she doesn't get over that anger. And then it clicked for me. So I was her sponsor for many years. And together we worked on our anger. What else? I want to say, if you think you need outside resources, the Big Book says if you need outside resources, avail yourself of them. So from where a lot of us come from, like, therapy is a great idea. For some people, church, acupuncture, yoga. It says in the Big Book, we're not a glum lot. And that, you know, if we're miserable, full of stinking thinking, why would newcomers even bother to stay? And so actually, AA has been like a big party to me all these years. I was in my first and very serious car accident January 10th, And my car almost went over the median. All these cars slammed into each other and into me. And then my car, last thing I remember, was going up over that concrete barrier to the other side. And when I woke up, it wasn't. It was back in the lane. And so my car's totaled. And I, really, like, what can I say? If I lost my keys, if you pissed me off at work, if anything, I couldn't cope. And I'd be crying. And I have a best friend of many years who kind of needs Al-Anon who would rescue me all the time because I couldn't cope. And I coped with this whole thing. I coped right there on the freeway. I count in my blessings. I have a job. I have insurance. I have a car. I didn't have a car till I was 30. I couldn't afford it and was opposed to them politically. what else? And so being on the side of the freeway and, like, being alive, I was so grateful, and then coping. So afterward, I called, once I got my rental car, like, hours later, called the friend who's not in Al-Anon, who maybe someday will go, and she's like, well, call Kaiser and ask him this, and you should get x-rays and this and this. I said, oh, okay. So then I called a friend in program, and she said, oh, my God, you're alive. Come with us. We're taking the ferry to the city tonight. Let's celebrate you being alive. And that's what I did. I didn't even go home. Yeah. I went to the Alameda Ferry, and there was a big sunset, and we walked up and down Embarcadero, and then we came back, and all the bridge lights were on. And then, like, midnight, I got back to my house from the accident. And I feel like that's what AA is like. Like, no matter what happens to us, like, just come back to meetings, just call us. Let's just celebrate being alive, because it's a miracle. I don't think if I have anything else to say. Let's see. Well, I know that my only job up here is to be of help to one person. So I pray that somebody out there is getting helped. Oh, I wanted to read you something because this is how I used to live, and I thought, like, this is what the world did to me, and this was just a fact of life. But then it turns out the literature says we don't have to live like this. I made that too. I'm having a music. Yeah. So, in the big book, on page 52, this is what I used to think life was just like and had to be like, but it turns out that this is like symptoms of alcoholism. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. And why would that be? Page 62. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. And I remember going into an AA meeting once early on and sitting next to a friend. I always, like, come in and slump in the chair. And Joe said, how are you? And I said, suicidal. He said, oh, suicidal or crabby? Look, I didn't really know. I didn't know. I only knew the polarities. So my life has so totally changed. You know, like, it's been a miracle. Everything was beyond my wildest dreams. I moved up in the work world. I got all those externals. I got calm, happy. I'm pretty happy, joyous, and free most of the time, except when I'm in a bad mood. Just everything changes. I have great friends. What was I going to say about that? I think I'll tell you what the book says will happen, which is in the 12 and 12, it says, by working a spiritual program, and most of this is in step 11, it says one of the first fruits of meditation is emotional balance. Wow, I couldn't imagine. Then it says that we should really keep on, even if we question this. Like, I thought a higher power, a spiritual program, prayer and meditation were for the weak. But I had to turn that around because I couldn't do it on my own. So it says, all those who have persisted have found strength not ordinarily their own. They found wisdom beyond their usual capability. and they have increasingly found a peace of mind which can stand firm in the face of difficult circumstances. On the next page it says, perhaps one of the greatest rewards of meditation and prayer is the sense of belonging that comes to us. We're no longer living in a completely hostile world. We're no longer lost and frightened and purposeless. So being an alcoholic, I got way into meditation, and then, you know, we have the disease of more. So I thought, well, maybe I'll ordain. And I went to live in a monastery for a year. And then I came out, and now it's like somewhere in the middle. But the great thing about AA is I had a job, and I saved money, and I went off and did the thing I most wanted to do up to that point, and I loved it. It was one of the best years ever. I love not talking. I love not having to do stuff, and I love meditation. But part of what brought me back is my you know, work wasn't really done, like through the steps and therapy and other things, and so after 17 years of recovery, that was the first time that I lived with a partner. I was 50 years old. Not that I had any intimacy problems. I just thought I was being free all those years. But I couldn't make it past 2.5 years with anybody. And now I've been in a relationship for 11 years. And it's great. She's great. And a few years ago, the absolute bottom fell out. I wish I wasn't in Al-Anon, because then I could tell you everything she did, and it was terrible. And I was crushed, and we broke up. And I went through that by going to 30 meetings in 30 days, then 60 meetings in 60 days, then 90 meetings in 90 days. And then I was feeling kind of stable. Then a year and a half passed, and we went to joint therapy for a year. And now we're trying it. We're kind of trying it. She's trying it. I'm kind of trying it. I'm a little gun-shy. But that's another miracle. Like, I am always fine, no matter what. I get scared, furious. I might be about to have some financial problems. I can never get that whole area straight. And a few weeks ago, I thought, I managed to make myself crazy enough, after 2 months of just, like, craziness, that I felt the most depressed I'd felt in years. Like, why? I didn't even know I could still go to that point. So I was calling program friends because I would never dream of handling stuff like that alone anymore. I was crying and saying, it's impossible, it's impossible. And she said, all right, it's impossible. So what are you going to do? Right. So I'm in the process of making some changes. But it's kind of a luxury problem because I work full-time and then I'm also changing my career. Because in my late 50s, I found what I really love, and I so love it. But I have to do it for free for some years before I get a license. Sometimes I get in these old stories, like, I mean, I'm 61, so it's embarrassing. Well, my parents can't pay for me like all my classmates are. And it's like, well, you know what? I had a whole work life. I forgot to save the fucking money to do for me what their 61-year-old parents are doing for them. And so I'm learning to, like, suit up, show up, speak up. I'm kind of like back at the beginning. I have to make the best of what I have. But this whole thing that it said, like, we get relieved of that life of misery, uselessness, fear. I won't go into it because we're almost at the end, but, you know, I've done my time in other programs like Debtors Anonymous. So say, do you have any financial problems, a few parking tickets racked up, haven't paid your tickets in a few years, a little credit card debt, in debt to your family, has your partner kicked you out? Like, what's up? Like, you're in the right place, and it all gets amazingly better. So I think that's all I have to say. Thanks.
All right. Well, we actually have 20 minutes of meeting left. You all want to hear a little bit more from our good friend Tobias? Handle it, brother.
Oh, man.
Sorry about this.
I don't know where he left off. But does anyone have the notes?
Fred?
Yeah.
So, all right. Well,
on your own.
OK, okay, so, you know, for me, when I was, you know, I growing up, you know, feeling isolated and not nurtured, I had always sought, I mean, I had quite a shield, you know, like being the tough guy. And just, you know, I always sought loyalty and love and honesty and all the things we get in here. At a much younger age, through all that haze, it was so hard to ask for it, you know. I didn't know how to communicate with my family, you know, with the little bit of family that I had. We didn't really talk about feelings much. My mom was so sad and depressed with all the shit that was going on. She didn't really have time for me. I was too busy doing my thing, getting all fucked up and wasted and stuff. And I just want to emphasize that, you know, like going to bars and stuff, you know, I was so shut off from my feelings and not knowing how to connect with you, even at the bar, you know, wanting to sit next to you. And what I really wanted from you was to tell you to tell me that you love me, you know, and for us to be able to like hug each other. I mean, you know, the making out thing, that wasn't going to go down, you know. What I'm trying to say is that, you know, so what would happen was we'd do shots and nothing would be said. We'd bro down, you know, and then we'd probably, you know, like hang out with more people and go to another bar and do a bunch of cocaine and still always feeling really hollowed out, you know, just from my past, never getting that thing, you know. And it's funny because when you start to get into doing the steps, it's like trying to build a house without a foundation. You know, it's just eventually it's going to cave in or some shit's going to happen. And in here, we actually get to put everything in reverse and dig down and actually, you know, take a look at what your part is. And it's hard. You know, it's hard if you're not used to it. And a little bit of writing is involved, but it's so worth it because you really start to pull things out that you never really tripped off of. I mean, I've been in therapy for like over 10 or 15 years, but being in AA and hanging out with you guys and listening to your stories has like given me like so much to draw from. And there's been so much similarities that it's just been like overwhelmingly mind blowing. You know, I didn't do well in school. I don't do well. I'm not the best at the steps. Like, I can't. It's really hard for me to focus and read. I mean, I don't know if anyone else has that problem. I get little tiny nuggets, and I've just learned to accept those little nuggets as being like pieces of gold, you know, because if I sit there and look at one page and try and make sense of it, it's just like, and read it again and read it again, I'm not going to get it. I just got to, like, do the work and hang out and talk about it, you know, and that's what we get to do, you know, when we spend time with each other, we can talk about what we didn't understand and what we did understand. And maybe there's something that you didn't understand that you can share at a meeting. And actually, maybe someone else can actually, someone else is in the same position that I'm in and can go, God damn it, that guy fucking understands what I was struggling with. Yes, I'm not alone. You know, so there's so much, cross networking and compassion and love that comes in these meetings, you know, being a newcomer was so hard for me because of my crazy mind and what would happen. And, you know, realizing that things were so bad and that I couldn't sit with myself. It was either like sit with myself and fucking suffer the consequences, which would probably mean go use because you could not talk to your friends and your brothers, you know, because they're not an AA, you know, it's just like trying to get that love, you know? So either do that or start showing up to meetings, you know, like I had relapsed so many times and I had just started to surrender, you know. And, you know, it's funny how when you really want something, all the portals open up and shit happens, you know. I mean, you can go do a lot. If you're not ready, you're not ready. You know, at least that's my story, you know. And when I was ready, things opened up and I actually started to hear things, you know. I just remember, you know, I would go to a lot of meetings and then I'd go drink. I would do my step work at a pool. I think it was a Temescal pool and like sneak vodka in to try and really, remember I was telling you that I had a hard time reading the steps. I would actually go, I'm going to get it this time. I'm going to drink this vodka and I'm gonna freaking read this shit, and it's all gonna, because I'm in my little element here with my vodka and my book, and I'm gonna underline some shit, and then I would go to a meeting and tell my sponsor that I was fine and I didn't drink, you know. I kept doing shit like that over and over, and I found this. It was the 1 o'clock on Monday old timers meeting. For some reason, that meeting clicked for me. You know, I sat at the big table there, and everybody was like, "What do you? You can't sit here." You know, I mean, I don't know if you've been at an old timers meeting. It was you. That's the vibe I got. They didn't actually say that, and I got the sweetest hugs and the sweetest smiles, and I don't know, something about that meeting. You know, I felt like I was hanging out with some family, or maybe it was a mom, nurturing mommy feeling that I wasn't getting out, that I never got, that I was getting there. But I was chosen to be secretary at that meeting pretty early on, and that really helped me formulate just like a family network, you know. So anyways, you know, what I was talking about, going to the bars and just connecting with people and never getting that. You know, it wasn't really until I started to show up here and open up and hear you guys talk and actually invest some time. I've been through a bunch of sponsors, and it was about 3 sponsors in, and I was still using. And I was at, I think it was like some first Friday thing at the Oakland Museum. I was all hammered and I didn't know what was going on. My sister was getting worse. I don't know if I told you guys that my sister was diagnosed with cancer, and that's when I started to kind of take sobriety a little bit more serious, but continued to relapse. It was, I was out there that one day, and I saw this old friend of mine who had been sober for some time. He's a guy that I went to high school with, a musician who, I don't know what happened. I had that thing with the eyes, you know, where like, you know, like, I started crying, and I actually dropped to my knees, and I said, help me, you know, please help me. I need help really bad. I don't know why this guy, it just happened to be this guy and me. I don't know, whatever, you know. And he took me to a meeting that Sunday, and he became my sponsor, and he took me to some really cool meetings where I started to see the similarities. There were other musicians, you know, it started to feel more like a community. And I got, a lot of people called me, and I called lots of people, and I actually started to get 5 minutes. Be cool. yeah, thanks. I needed that. So in any case, so I began to work the steps, you know, with him in a way that was a little unorthodox and a little bit. I'm kind of, like I said, I'm not the best at reading, whatever. We kind of had to do it my way. I'm also pretty stubborn. So, you know, he actually said, he's a producer. He said, if you can make it to 90 days sober, we're going to record a song. I'll let you, and I couldn't sing without, you know, alcohol or vodka or drugs or whatever the fuck. So it just was kind of like a big deal to, you know, for me to have that goal. And, you know, I'm not saying we should all have goals in order to get sober. We don't, you know, cash and prizes and all that stuff. It, I don't know. That's kind of cool stuff, right?
Yeah.
And recording a song, yo. Yeah, about feelings with acoustic guitar this time. It had acoustic guitar in it. I sung all like low and sexy and shit. Didn't play it for many people. I can't listen to it. I wish I had it right now. Yeah. In any case, we ended up forming a band together, and we became so close that I had to like fire him as a sponsor because we became too close, you know. And that's what you're going to do to me by when we go to Tulum. Not you, but you. Talking to my sponsor. So, in any case, so now is it 2 minutes now? Did you put that there?
No, that was already there for
okay.
The first time.
Is it there? Are we there yet? Okay. So in any case, well, what's happening now? So now I, you know, what's funny is now I kind of, I'm kind of like I am with my sponsees. I'm a little bit like I was as a sponsee. I'm kind of how do I say this? I'm not. I don't know. I just kind of like I'm just a big giant or a little tiny hug of compassion and just like do the deal. But I love, you know, a lot of I love yous, a lot of call me anytime, a lot of like let's talk about it, you know. I mean, even though I don't like invoke or is that the right word? I'm not all about being a therapist to my sponsees, but I think there's a level in which you know, to talk about stuff and have that connection with each other that maybe I needed when I was younger. You know, I'm a big believer in that, you know, and it's just, man, it's so fucking deep. This program is so fucking deep. I don't even really go to rehearsal that much anymore because I get high off of this shit. I just, it's on such a different level. This is to me that it kind of frightens me, you know, it's so amazing that I get a second chance, you know. I thank you for letting me come up and have a second shot because I needed that. You know? So, thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.